webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, July 28th. 2-0-10, the only July 28th, 2-0-10 in the history of the world. We're making history tonight, ladies and gentlemen. This is the only time that we will ever talk on this particular evening. And we are glad to have you along for the ride. Get on the phone. Let us hear from you tonight. We're talking all things gospel, all things spiritual, all things religion, and whatever else is on your mind at 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260, coming to you free and postage paid, 1-800-436-3260, the very talented and handsome and much in demand Sean O'Halloran is waiting to take your call at 1-800-436-3260. And speaking about being much in demand, on the other end of the phone, coming from Houston, Texas, at the home office of the Gospel Revolution, is the legendary Michael Williams. Michael.
Good evening, Glenn. Here we are, another Wednesday.
It's another midweek edition, another opportunity to get over the hump, another opportunity to fill up on the gospel, the good news, the salvation of God.
When Sean called me to for us to start the program just a few minutes ago, he said, "Okay, Michael, let's give him the same pizzazz as last week in half the time."
Yeah, well, see, that's just, you know what? That's just that's just Sean wanting to shirk his responsibilities.
Oh, that's never happened.
No, actually, that's not true. What happened last week, for you beautiful humans who were with us, you know this. For those that have not heard last week's program, you need to listen to it on the archive. We actually had four additional people in studio. We had Jeff and Kate Benham from Australia. We had George and Bonnie Howell from Pennsylvania. And so it would just make sense that with everybody sharing that the time would be extended. We have heard through the grapevine, Jeff being in touch with Kate, who's now in Nashville recording her next album, that we may hear from her tonight.
Yay.
So if you want to get on the show, please do so. We're hoping to hear from Kate Benham as she records her next gospel-laced album. Plus, we want to hear about her travails and travels as she had a quote-unquote ministry date and gig last week, I believe in Georgia. But for the time being, right off the get-go, we could not think of a better way to start this particular program on this late July evening. We're going to go to the Natty, Cincinnati, Ohio, our senior Cincinnati correspondent, Greg Amberg. Gregory!
Glenn and Mike, how's it going?
Gregory.
Hey, Glenn. Oh, listen, I'm Greg, excuse me.
Hey, I'm calling in tonight to judge somebody.
Let's good for you.
I am. I've decided that I try not to judge people. I try to listen to Mike's teaching. I try to, you know, listen to what Paul and Jesus said about judging. But I can't resist tonight. I have to judge Paula White. I'm not judging Benny Hinn, because if I was Benny, I'd probably go out with Paula, too.
Yes, Greg is referring to the report that came via the National Enquirer here in the United States of America, that Benny and Paula are engaged in an extramarital affair because they are not married. And not surprised to this Gospel Revolution reporter, and Michael will verify this, weeks ago we heard that, of course, Paula's been divorced from Randy White here down in Tampa at the Church Without Walls that I have actually been to, sad to say. And but this is their headquarters. This is where they all got it going. And, of course, they got divorced a number of years ago, caused a big hubbub, as divorce will in the evangelical community. But I happened to catch, and it was just by circumstance and coincidence, that I caught Paula on Benny Hinn's show. And I don't think, Michael, we talked about this on the webcast.
No, we
but
didn't.
As we've often said, our private conversations would make for better webcasts. And I think I mentioned to you that the sexual tension between Benny Hinn and Paula White on his show was absolutely measurable.
Yeah.
And did I not say that this would be coming down the pike?
You prophesied. Most holy.
I prophesied it. I prophesied, damn it. I love when
you
I prophesy and something comes true.
You told me on the phone several weeks ago, just wait and see. Those two will be found out. Those two are getting it on.
I'm just saying. I certainly don't blame or judge Benny, but I do blame or judge Paula.
She should be judged if she's going to bed with Benny Hinn.
Well, that just shows how open-minded you are, Gregory, that you could make that kind of judgment for the feminine sex. But, no, I would have no problem having time with Paula in that kind of biblical way, if you catch my drift. But, yes, ladies and gentlemen, the National Enquirer that has not been wrong. Wasn't wrong on the John Edwards story, wasn't wrong on the Al Gore story, wasn't wrong on the Tiger Woods story, has now reported that Benny and Paula White have hooked up, and I bet there's some serious tongue-talking going on in that bedroom.
Well, we'll see if somebody gets chased down the street with a Bible through the window or something instead of a golf club this time.
Well, there's an interesting denial on Paula's website, apparently. Benny's initial denial has now been taken down on his website. So, listen, God bless them. You know, I hope they have a good time. I hope they enjoy themselves. But here's the issue, fellas, is that, Michael, these people, of course, have spent their lives and have made millions of dollars in their careers criticizing and judging other people for being guilty of the very same act. And listen, whether they are or not physically, you could not help, as I pointed out and as Mike and I talked about, Michael, that of course they were thinking about it. You couldn't help think about it. You couldn't help watch that program and not think what was going on in their heads. And if they're guilty about it in their heads,
sexual, according
to their interpretation of the Bible, they are guilty in front of God, even if they had not done any kind of physical act.
No, you were describing to me the sexual tension that was on the broadcast, which I have had some encounter with others in situations like that, so I certainly can relate. But yeah, it's amazing. Once you understand the gospel, it can turn you into a prophet very easily, because there are some things that are just so predictable when you have people who are in the business of judging and condemning, that they normally judge and condemn that which they are already guilty of. I don't think their judgment drives them to do those things. I think that we as human beings, not just they, if you have an inclination to judge, you're going to judge what you hate about yourself.
I've got to tell you what happened at a funeral I played.
I do want to hear that story, but the hating of what you're talking about is something that is gauged based on your misinterpretation of God's view and opinion of yourself and of the rest of the race,
Of
the human race. It's not an accurate judgment, is it?
No, it definitely isn't. We've got our buddy, the guy who was the head of the group against the homosexual and gay community that was caught with the prostitute. What's his name?
Ted Haggard.
Haggard, yeah. Haggard, of course, he was judging what he was, what he was guilty of. As far as what the Christian world would call guilt is concerned, and of course, he wound up in the very same situation. So yeah, that point kind of proves itself out time after time. Jimmy Swaggart judged severely that which was his greatest weakness, and even when they do it in such bizarre ways. Here, just like with Haggard, it's not just sex, it's prostitutes and drugs. And with Swaggart, it wasn't just sex, it was prostitutes. And I know when he got arrested in Indio, California, the reason he got picked up is because he had picked up this girl and he had left his porn magazine open to try to entice her. And so when he saw the police car didn't want anything to do with him at all, but he started grabbing the books and shoving them under the seat, and his car was weaving all over the place. So that's why they pulled him over. But this stuff always comes out so weird. You can't just be sexual. You got to be really weird and sexual when you judge other people for your own fault.
You got to be sexual and weird.
And weird, yeah.
Well, Greg, when you called and I saw that you were on the line, I thought you were going to talk about judgment about the story that you're about to tell, which I'm aware of because of what you experienced and articulated to me privately. This is not surprising. What Greg's going to be saying, but these type of things need to be exposed and talked about and contemplated by people who are thinking about the gospel and thinking about God's judgment and thinking about God's love and compassion that can come from human beings to others, especially in tragic circumstances. So please enlighten us.
Well, on Saturday, played and sang at a funeral for a woman who was killed in an accident in Cincinnati last week. And I didn't really know the dynamic of what I was getting into, but she was a lesbian. She had a partner, and she had an 11-year-old daughter, I think, from a previous marriage. But when I got to the funeral, I got there early because I care. I'm a professional. but I got there early to do a sound check.
Was after a late night gig at a local establishment in the Cincinnati area. So
yes, it was.
You didn't get much sleep, but you were determined to do a good job and to minister, if you will, the best you could to a grieving group of people that were about to gather.
Right. I try not to say no when people ask me to do funerals, just because it's a time when, you know, if I can do something to help alleviate a little bit of pain, I try.
Right.
To
and
that.
This was a pretty well-known situation in Cincinnati because it was a very tragic accident
that occurred. Yeah, it was a jet ski accident right down on the Ohio River right downtown. A lot of people witnessed it, and she was killed. And, there were a lot of members.
Dinging. Yeah, are you dinging in the background there?
We're getting a dinging. What?
We're getting a dinging in the background.
Can you hear that?
Mute your computer, whoever is dinging.
Okay.
So this was a well-known situation. It came out by the people that knew the circumstance that the young woman that was killed with the 11-year-old daughter was lesbian. And
yes.
Then somebody called you to come and minister for a reason, right?
Right. I didn't know the lady or anything, and a friend of mine who I knew from when I was at the Vineyard called me and said, you know, hey, would you come out and do some music at this thing? It's at a Baptist church. And I said, sure, you know, I'll do it. And so I did a sound check Saturday morning with the pastor.
Well, wait a second. Why did he call you?
Well, I think what I originally told you may not have been as accurate as I thought.
Okay.
So he knew I would do it because he knew how I feel about this particular situation. It wasn't like I was sought out just because of that. Did that make any sense?
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay. We did the sound check. Everything was great. They had an unbelievably nice grand piano in this. It's a big Baptist church in Cincinnati. And the mic check was great. Everything was fine. So he told me, he said, you know, at 9:30, the sound man's going to get here. Just go back and tell him what's going on and that you're going to come up about 10 till 10 and start playing, and everything will be fine. So about 9:30, the sound man gets there, and I walked over to just make sure he knew what was going on. They had given me a little printout of what was supposed to happen in the service. And this guy was sitting there with a Bible with his nose stuck in it, and when I went over and tried to introduce myself, he wouldn't look at me. And I said, hello, I'm Greg Amberge. I'm going to be playing some songs today. The guy would not look up at me. And I said, I just wanted to, you know, I'm going up there at about 10 till 10, and just when I look back at you, just turn the canned music off, and I'll start playing the piano. And he wouldn't acknowledge that I was standing there. And finally I said, excuse me, this is very important. And the guy had his nose stuck down in a Bible. I wish I had been over enough to find out what he was reading, but something tells me it might have been Romans. He wouldn't talk to me. Finally, he grunted that he heard me and acknowledged that he heard me, and I thought, well, that was really weird. What in the world was that? So at 10 till or 12 till or whatever, I go up and sit down at the piano. I look back at the back, and he will not look up at me so that I can tell him, I can nod to him and tell him to turn the canned music off so I can start playing. He won't look up at me. And so my friend who had asked me to come and play at this funeral, he walked back to the back and said he's ready to start. And so he reaches up and pulls the fader down. Well, I happened to just tap on the mic a little bit to make sure it was all working, and the mic wasn't on. And I thought, well, I'm not going to sing for 7 minutes anyway. So I play my songs, and I get to the place where I'm supposed to sing a song about right before the pastor comes up. And I can't get the guy's attention. He won't look up from reading the Bible for me to tell him that he's turned my microphone off. And
well,
my friend,
he probably
again,
never turned your microphone on.
Well, it was on great during the sound check. So my friend goes back to the back. There's probably 350 people at this funeral. Goes back to the back and says, hey, his mic's not on. And the guy looks up at him and he goes, oh, looks like it's on from here. So I sing a song with no microphone. The pastor
comes up. In front of 350 people.
In front of 350 people in a large church. I mean, this church would probably hold about 600. And the pastor comes up. His microphone was on. He did the opening prayer. And then I'm supposed to sing a song by Mercy Me. I don't remember what it was. But I look back in the back, and I'm trying to tell the guy the mic's not on. And he had apparently turned it off on purpose. So I stood there until he turned it on, or I stood up to him, like embarrass him enough to turn it on. He turned it on. Halfway through the song, the microphone mysteriously went out. So I did the last half of the song with no microphone. The lady who had died, some of her friends got up to talk, and the same mic that worked great when the pastor talked suddenly wasn't on. This guy in the back of the church was sabotaging a woman's funeral because she was a lesbian.
All in the name of Jesus.
In the name of Jesus. Later on, of course, I did another song. I actually stood up at the end and I said, this her favorite song was You Are My Sunshine when she was a little girl, and some of her friends and her family got together and they wrote a few verses. And I said, I apologize that you're not going to be able to hear these verses, but I'm going to sing them anyway. I said that without a microphone, and I sat down and I sang without a mic. And then the funeral director came up, got my microphone, and was going to give everybody directions to the cemetery. The microphone was mysteriously on when he talked. So this guy, I had found out, I guess there was some tension within the church, it was a Baptist church, about whether they should have this funeral there. And apparently the sound man took it upon himself to sabotage a woman's funeral because her partner was there and there were a lot of members of the gay community there. And I was so incensed. I was so mad that my friend kind of saw me. He intercepted me and walked me out the back of the church because I'm a little bit of a hothead. I don't know if you've seen my Facebook posts. I get riled up every now and then. And he said, let's just let it go. Just let it go.
Do you know the guy's name?
So, what's that?
Did you know the guy's name?
The sound man?
Yeah.
No. No, I'd never seen him before or anything. And later on, I'll say this and then I'll be done. After I thought about this more and more, I realized that I was probably, when I was that guy's age, I was just like him. I don't know that I would have sabotaged somebody's funeral.
No, you would not. I'm telling you this right now. You would not have sabotaged that guy's funeral.
No, I would not have sabotaged a funeral. But I'm telling you,
you'd have questioned it. It would have been an issue. But if the decision from the higher ups would have happened that we are going to have this funeral, you would not have sabotaged it. I'm very confident in saying that.
You are correct. I would not have sabotaged.
I wouldn't have sabotaged it either. As whacked out as I was, as anti-gay rights as I was, as vehement as I was in the industry that I was in to fight against the encroaching gay rights movement, I still, Michael, for somebody to do that, they have got to be so callous, so hateful, perhaps even homosexual themselves, and hating themselves so much to such a degree that in a moment of grief for family members and friends that are gathered in their community, instead of seeing, even from an evangelical standpoint, this is an opportunity to reach out with the love of God. For somebody to have that much bitterness and hatred in their heart, that is really shocking.
Well, it's just Christian cruelty. The thing of it is, if they really believe, now, the thing of it is that if the church really believed the doctrine that they teach, they all should have reacted the way he did.
Exactly.
Thankfully, people's hearts are kinder than their doctrine.
Exactly.
Obviously, with this guy, his heart is just as evil as his doctrine. But but to be consistent, the whole church should have done it. To be consistent with what I'm sure they've heard from the pulpit, they shouldn't have done the funeral. But you see, they never are consistent. They can't be consistent because the cruelty of their consistency would be just overflowing. So they preach their doctrine, and then they hide. And then they hide like a bunch of cowards. They hide then from their own convictions and put on a public face, just like we saw with during all of the mess of the religious folks saying the things they did after 9/11, and then go on Larry King and won't back it up. They won't follow through with it. Because in the final analysis, Christianity is as cruel. It is just as cruel as radical Islam. It is just as cruel.
In some ways, not in the practical working out in our lives today. Certainly throughout history.
Oh, absolutely. History has proven that it gets just as cruel.
But from a practical working out. or from a construct of a religion, I would make the argument that it is more cruel. Because on the one hand, Christianity says that God loves you unconditionally, and we Christians are going to manifest the unconditional love of God. But God will judge sin. He will judge the sinner. He will condemn homosexuals. He will condemn liars. He will condemn adulterers. He will condemn thieves. In a very real way, Christianity is the most whacked out religion out of the three monotheistic and all the other religions that are not monotheistic in their formation, because it's schizophrenic. It's the ultimate control. You're in with God no matter what. He loves you no matter what. But now you've got to attain to this unconditional perfect love. That is cruelty beyond anything that we could really describe in words.
Of the three religions, it takes the only hope that the planet has and then perverts it and takes it back. It presents it and then retracts it. And it retracts it at the most desperate moments that a human being can have.
Greg, you still with us?
I'm still with you. Yes.
You want to finish up what you were saying, Greg?
Well, yeah, I was just one last thing that I've noticed. It's really unfair what the church does, even in this situation where the pastor was pretty gracious in his words and everything. But the woman's partner, who was grieving as a widow would grieve, was not even mentioned in the funeral. Her name was not even said.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, we've just got to get beyond that, where people are sharing a life together. They love each other. She's in tremendous grief. She's just lost her partner.
Yeah.
And her name doesn't even get mentioned at the funeral. It just seems odd to me.
Well, and that's the very same thing we were talking about, though, Greg. His words were kind, and his actions were cruel.
Yeah.
And, you know, he offered this beautiful presentation of a loving God in some form, or I'm sure that you would be speaking contrary to that if he hadn't. But then his actions were absolutely cruel. How absolutely cruel not to acknowledge the partner of someone who is deceased, with a pastor standing there, knowing that that is the number one thing that you do as a pastor, is you acknowledge the immediate family.
Exactly.
And you know what was
amazing to me, the little girl, this was not her biological mother that was left. Her biological mother was the one that had died. She sat in the funeral clutching on to the partner.
Yeah.
As her mother.
Yeah, of course.
Clutching on to her, holding on to her for strength. And I thought, you know, man, we just don't get it in the United States about what a family can be and what relationships can be. Because here's this little girl, she loves this other woman.
And you know, the reality of the rest of this story is the greatest possibility, is that that little girl will not be able to be raised by her other mother.
I know that's a possibility.
Dude, this pisses me off to such an extent. The anger and the rage that is in me about this particular issue is incalculable. I can't describe it. And it's not because it affects me directly.
Right.
I have no gay family members that I know of. I have no gay children that I know of. I'm not gay. But because the man that is on the other line in Houston is gay, and I know that there could be no better parent, there could be no better friend, there could be no better mentor or human being. And for people who are of a homosexual orientation to be judged any less worthy based on their sexuality, it is maddening to me. And the reason that I can relate to it is because people have judged Jewish people as being less than human throughout the ages. That I can relate to.
Right.
Well, the cruelty that was expressed in this entire thing, it was, on a totally different level. Please don't think I'm comparing the thing to, but to be able to express it to where that people understand the impact on the level that it impacted these people, it was Holocaust-like in its demonstration. It was cruel. It was cruel.
Yeah, it was
to the
very
grave.
Much like. You know, segregationist racism
in the United States. You start here, and you think that people are not worthy of compassion and the type of humanity that should be expressed at a moment of grief like that, including and especially for this young woman's partner. And the next thing you know, you're calling them vermin, and they're worthy of extermination, and they're certainly not worthy of being spoken up for. This program, this effort is going to speak up for people. That's, if there's anything that we know that all people are equal in the eyes of God. As far as God is concerned, there is no vermin. There is no less person. And if that's good enough for God, that's good enough for us.
Absolutely. That is
all right,
good
Gregory.
News.
Thanks for taking us through the halfway part of the program.
All right, talk to you later.
You're
thanks,
the man.
Greg. Bye.
There's Greg Amberge, ladies and gentlemen, our valiant senior correspondent from Cincinnati.
I'm proud of Gregory.
He's on the front line, and that's where we like to be. This is Glenn Klein Online, Michael Williams, Gospel Revolution, Wednesday night. We're going to take your calls at 1-800-436-3260. The line is available for you now. If you got a busy signal, now that line is available to you at 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran is available to take your call as soon as he pushes this button, and we will be back in 1 minute.
Folks, the world was not, quote, going to hell because of what the world did. The world was going to hell because of what somebody else did. The preaching of the gospel makes no one righteous. It reveals the righteousness that you already have. The reason the blood of Christ only covers transgressions under the First Testament is because that's the only place where transgression existed. Everyone has been made righteous. You've got righteousness you didn't ask for, righteousness you didn't even believe for. You might say, well, I'm an atheist. Well, welcome. You're an atheist that's on your way to heaven. This is clear, sound doctrine in every Bible school that is on the face of this planet that teaches any form of Christianity.
The statements you just heard are from the Northern Midwest Conference in the teaching series, Spiritual Understanding, the Knowledge of God. James Pep Washburn writes, "Tonight was probably the most powerful presentation of the real gospel that I have ever heard. This is no exaggeration. The guy was absolutely firing on all cylinders tonight. He was in afterburner mode. No loose ends. Amazing. This 3-CD series is available for $24 plus shipping and handling, or in a downloadable audiobook for $12. Order your copy of the CDs or download at gospelrevolution.com today."
Welcome back to Glenn Klein Online. It is Wednesday night. That series is available at gospelrevolution.com, as well as the latest series that is available as a downloadable audio book at gospelrevolution.com. The series that Michael taught in Calgary at the Gospel Revolution Convention on the Book of Romans, the entire Book of Romans taught, Romans Revealed, available also at gospelrevolution.com, waiting on the latest commercial from the very talented and committed Robert Moore. And Michael, we continue to play that commercial until the other one's available. We've had a lot of people take advantage already for the Book of Romans series, and we've had some incredible letters from people who said that that teaching in Calgary literally changed your lives. You took an entire book from the New Testament and taught it in context, and this is something that, of course, is so missing from the pulpits across the world in Christianity. But you took a book, and as you go through something like that, not only are you teaching, but you're learning quite a bit yourself as well.
Well, yeah, if you, by taking it in context and acknowledging what each part says as you go, it defines itself. So, yeah, I learned a lot during the process of this, as I always do, because of the teaching style, really, that I've learned from Paul. Actually, I'm only following through with Paul's teaching style. It really is a very profound thing. This book of Romans, it was a very exciting moment to me when I finished that up. I remember finishing up Hebrews, and it was a moment also. But doing this one in Romans, I'm telling you, I just cannot express the gratitude in my heart for being able to do that. It is impressive. I have to tell you that the teaching on the Book of Romans is impressive. Number one, I'm impressed with Paul's teaching. I am flabbergasted by the church's ability to pull his teachings apart out of context and preach something just the absolute opposite to what Paul's point is.
The opposite.
Absolute.
The opposite. The 180-degree opposite of what Paul intended. The church has made a case for people being able to, as Greg was talking about, keep their nose, maybe in the Book of Romans, as Greg said, during somebody's funeral, to come up with the kind of cruelty that was manifested at that funeral in Cincinnati. And yet it is exactly the opposite of what the so-called apostle of grace was intending.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it was one of the strangest responses we got, you'll have to hear me out on this, was actually from Vic Dobrennan. And you got to understand that Vic was there during this entire teaching, every moment of it. He was there. I don't think that he was missing in any part of it. But one of the strongest comments that we got about listening to the, I think he got it on download, after he downloaded it, he sent in an email commenting about the power of this series and listening to it. Well, he sat through it. So now he is going back and going through it, listening to it again, and his strongest comments were not from sitting through it. His strongest comments are coming from listening to it via the download through audio. So
right, and that is such an important point,
ladies and gentlemen. We cannot stress this enough. You guys who have followed this webcast have heard us talk about this on numerous occasions. The gospel is something that needs to be contemplated over and over and over again. Going into this particular show tonight, and we try to do a good job for you guys every week, as we have for the last 4 years on this show, and as we do whenever we speak in public, certainly Michael, whenever he goes in public. But I called Michael, and I knew that I was not in a good place. I was not ready to share and to communicate with you beautiful humans. And so I said, I need to hear some good news. I need to hear some gospel. And before we were off, we talked for about a half an hour earlier this evening. I was in a much better place. Why? Because the gospel was enumerated. The gospel was meditated upon. We contemplated these things. And, Michael, there's nothing else that works in the world to affect one's emotions, to affect one's ability to be stable and to cope and to move forward than the gospel and the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think it speaks to the reality of the life that is the gospel. The power of God is the gospel. The gospel is the power of God, and we will never emphasize that too much. And if the gospel is the power of God unto salvation, and we know Paul's teaching was to the salvation of the soul, for God's sake, if your soul's got some problems, it needs some gospel. It may need a lot of gospel. My soul needs gospel all the time. I'm just
right. It's just like if you know that you're thirsty, you know you're manifesting thirst. You know you need some water.
Absolutely.
If your soul is downtrodden and if you are bummed out and you're depressed, you know that your soul needs the gospel. Nothing. You can watch a movie. You can read a book. You can watch a television show that brings some humor and brings some light to your heart for a moment.
Yeah,
but there is nothing that will lift your heart and prepare you for the next step of your life, whether it be the next 10 minutes or the next day, as the gospel. This is our conviction. This is what we believe. We do not believe that God is going to do something for you, that there's going to be some revelation that comes your way about the next step that you need to take that's going to be delivered from an angel. We do not believe that God is going to swoop down and heal your physical body or your finances or your marriage or your children. But we do believe that the teaching and the preaching and the sharing and meditating of the good news of the gospel will affect your soul, will affect your emotions, because it does affect how you see yourself, and how you see yourself is everything. This is Glenn Klein Online. It's Gospel Revolution Wednesday night. If you haven't figured it out already, we're glad to have you along with us. We talked about at the outset of this webcast, so we might hear from the talented and very personable gospel revolutionary from Australia, Kate Benham, who has been in Nashville, and sure enough, she was nice enough to call in tonight, and we are so happy to welcome from Nashville, Tennessee, by way of Australia, by way of Tampa Bay and Georgia, Ms. Kate Benham. Kate!
Hello, how you going?
Kate, how do you feel tonight?
I am just loving this. I don't want to go home. We are just having the best fun here recording this album. All the guys here are just amazing. I actually got to play piano on a couple of my songs, and just following their chart and playing along with them has just been... They are geniuses. I put that on my Facebook. They really, really are. And, so fun. It is sounding fantastic. So we are really excited about this.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so Kate and Jeff were in studio with us last week, and then you guys went to, did you go to Georgia from there?
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yes, we did.
And tell us about your experience at the church in Georgia.
Yes. So a very close friend of ours, he's been a friend for about 3 years, is establishing a church there, and so asked us to come and speak and play there, and kind of told me that she really despises the message of the redemption of the world. So
The pastor told you prior to you ministering,
yeah,
that she despises the message of the redemption of the world.
That's right.
Did she tell you why she despises that?
She just sees the other, the New Testament arguments against it.
Okay.
Which we know.
So she's pretty, traditional evangelical from that perspective.
Well, she's Pentecostal, and she's had signs and wonders, and she's just trying to build her church on certain tenets, I guess. And so with respect to her, we really didn't have the opportunity to say what we would have liked to, but we kind of did. We haven't got anything else. That was the problem.
Right,
we don't have anything.
So you hear her say this.
Yeah.
And then given, your perspective and, what your heart is, what's your response when you hear that she despises the message of the redemption of the world?
I recommended that, and I'm going to buy some of Mike's stuff and give it to her, because, and she said to me, look, I probably won't even listen to that, but I really hope she does. She tells me she's open and whatnot, but I don't know. I think she has so much to lose, She has so much to lose if she sees the truth. Anyway, so I sang the gospel and everyone loved it. See, they accept it through a song.
Yeah.
And Jeff got up and spoke about how we're all one and said some great things also. And then actually after we had both spoken, the guy who's producing my music, who produced my last album and who's doing this one, got up and spoke, and he just really stepped over the line and said some stuff.
What did he say?
What exactly did he say? He's actually here now. He's in the other room because we're having a session here at the moment. We're still in studio here at the moment. I can't think, but it was...
What's his name?
His name's Chuck Day.
So could you go get him on the phone?
Yeah, okay, sure.
Okay, hold on. We want to talk to you again, though, okay?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Alrighty.
All right, so there's Kate.
Hang on, I'm just going into the studio.
They're doing a session right now.
Yeah.
She's our traveling reporter.
These guys are wanting to have a chat.
Yeah. Yep, we can hear the music in the background. This is awesome.
These guys would like to talk to you. This is Mike Williams, who I told you about, and Glenn Klein, just wanting to speak to you about what you said the other night. Is that okay? Okay, here he is. This is Chuck. He's awesome.
This is Spontaneous Radio, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello.
Chuck.
Yes.
This is Glenn Klein and Mike Williams.
Hey, Glenn and Mike. How are you?
We're doing wonderfully.
Hey, Chuck. Hey.
We just were hearing from Kate about your experience at the church the other night, and Kate was getting to the story about when you got up and shared what you had in your heart, and we were just wondering what you shared and what they found so objectionable.
Well, I just hate conflict so badly anyway, but when I got up, I felt like speaking about how God feels about us, and the reason that I did was from a pastoral point of view, you want the people that attend any gathering to come away from there with the rewards that being together brought, whatever that happens to be, and a lot of them come to church week after week, and they don't feel like they can, enter in into worship or enter in into, just having fun with the Lord because of whatever they've done, or they think they've sinned, or they think they've, you know, slipped, or they think they've, you know, unworthy and all kind of issues like that. And so I began to tell them how that God saw us, and, you know, that Hebrews 10 talks about how that he is has sent a more excellent sacrifice to Christ Jesus, because the old way wasn't working. The blood of bulls and goats couldn't take away sins. People came back year after year to worship with their sacrifices because their consciences were never cleansed. And finally, he said, I'm going to send Christ. He did. He sent Christ. Christ said, it is finished. All sin was covered, the Hebrews 10 says, once and for all time. And I said, you're going to have to understand that that means what it says. And if it doesn't, we should just throw the Bible away because it's inerrant. It's errant. And we shouldn't believe it. And I said, because the thing is, if we believe this is the Word of God and this is what we have as a guide and whatever you, however you believe on the Bible, that, you know, it's God's Word, then we need to believe all of it. And if it says that he settled sin once and for all times, he did. And you need to quit worrying so much about a sin consciousness and have a Christ consciousness. I went into, you know, how that it was really about, not about us having to worry about sin, but if we needed to even think about anything, it should be our character. And a lot of people, they would rather have religion to keep them in line than to actually stand up and have character, or the character of Christ, because of the want to be in a relationship with him, not having to be in a relationship with him, you know. And I think that they probably thought I was getting a little close to a oneness type message or an inclusion type message. And so when I got through, you know, it was just, we want all points of view to be honored here, but basically I was wrong. So
so wait a minute. So, all right, so you get done with your sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And you sit back down in, are you sitting in the pulpits, or are you sitting in
the front in the congregation?
Row.
Yeah, in the congregation on the front
row. Okay, and then the pastor gets up and basically refutes what you had just had said.
Yeah, well, I made the statement that we were Christ, because we were the body of Christ, and I said, how can you separate your head from your body? You can't. And I said, if Christ's head is in the headship of Christ, I understand, is more than just a physical head. It's the headwaters, the source of. And but if he is our source, and if we are part of him, and we are his body, as the Bible describes it, then we have the same DNA. We have the same rights, the same power, the same everything. And all that's been given to us, and more. And, you know, all this stuff's in the Word. It's every bit of it's in the Bible. You know, I guess I really don't understand why, but whenever she stood up, she said, but we're not Christ. You know, okay, we're not, whatever.
How did that make you feel while you were sitting there?
Well, I mean, I kind of saw it coming. It was telegraphed just a little bit. I guess I picked up on that. And I didn't really care, to be honest with you. I mean, like I said, you know, I want everybody just to be in their own state of spiritual evolution. Because we're all going somewhere, you know. It's just that some of us are in different places at the same time.
That's a good position to take when you're in a
different
situation like that.
At the same time. I like that. I like that a lot. Chuck, what's your last name?
Day.
D-A-Y?
Mm-hmm.
And where are you out of?
I live up near Atlanta, Georgia.
What's your specific city?
We have a little town called Houston, Georgia. Houston.
All right. Well, are you on Facebook?
My life.
I've been through Georgia 150 times, and I've never heard the name of that town.
Yeah, it's up on 85 north of Atlanta, Interstate 85.
Really? And I've covered every inch of 85 north of Atlanta. I've never heard that town.
It's pretty country up there.
Yeah.
Are you on Facebook?
Yes, we are. Just go to Facebook and put in Chuck Day, and it'll bring up my page. And I also have a website, chuckday.com, and tells a little bit about our music ministry. I'm a country singer. We travel all over the world singing country music. Some of it has some Christian words, and others just, you know, songs that I've written about my family and my wife and my kids and life, you know.
Well, that's good country music.
Yeah, that's what country music is all about.
What's your favorite country song?
Oh, man. it's hard for me to say, but there's a song that a friend of mine recorded and never done anything. It's called What Goes Without Saying Has Gone Without Saying Too Long. And as far as the song is well written, that's one of my favorite songs.
Wow. That's awesome.
Like little
George
Strait.
We need to stay in touch via Kate. I can tell you what my favorite country song is.
Yeah?
Kinky Friedman, They Don't Make Jews Like Jesus Anymore.
Well, you tipped it off when you said Kinky Friedman, man. He's a trip.
Sean, thanks for your guts and for taking the time with us tonight, and thanks for your help with Kate. And
yeah, Chuck, thank you, guys.
We hope to meet you sooner rather than later.
Well, let me tell you,
put Kate back on, will you?
Yeah,
right.
Here we go.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
There's Chuck Day, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, I'm back again.
Oh, you're having a good time, we can tell.
We are having a great time.
So give us the name and some of the lyrics of the first song that comes to your mind from the new album that you're working on right now.
I'm a container of light. I've always been here. To me, there's no more night. My vision is crystal clear. My eyes are lamps of fire. I'm awake. I'm in the image of the Almighty. My walk is tried. My judgment passed. Someone apocalypsed me. I've never felt like this before. I can't see evil anymore. Now the spirit of life is my law. Is this what I've been waiting for? And actually, when I wrote it, it was kind of in a swing kind of feel, and they have rocked it up. So,
oh my gosh, it's wonderful.
It sounds really cool as an opening. That's the opening song.
Someone
I
has apocalypsed
just got
me.
All kinds of Pentecostal goosebumps all over me.
So now say that line again. Someone apocalypted me.
Wait. Say the whole thing again, Kate. I want to hear the whole thing again.
Really? Okay. I'm a container of light, and I have always been here, because we're eternal, right? To me, there's no more night. My vision is crystal clear. My eyes are lamps of fire. You know, the Christ in the Revelation, I think, is a picture of us.
Yeah.
I'm in the image of the Almighty. My walk is tried and my judgment passed. Someone apocalypsed me already. I've never felt like this before. I can't see evil anymore. And now the spirit of life is my law. Is this what I've been waiting for? Jeez. And then it goes, welcome to freedom. I would have sworn I was free before, but this is what I've been waiting for. Welcome to freedom.
Someone apocalypsed me.
Yes.
I love that.
Thanks.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you. Well, Kate and Jeff are on their way to Houston after Nashville. And hopefully a week from now you'll be in Houston. And
yes.
We will hear the aftertale of the recording session as well.
Yeah,
awesome.
That's right.
Where's
Jeff? He's here somewhere. Hang on. Do you want to talk to Jeff?
Of course.
Here we go. Oh, they're starting to play my song out there. Can you hear that? Hang on.
Yeah, we can hear you guys doing your thing.
Aww,
this is what happens,
stopped.
Ladies and gentlemen. How long have you guys been in studio today?
How long have we been here? Since about 9 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've been there for about 12 hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how you do in the world of recording.
Yes, so this is our second day.
You pull an all-nighter.
Yep, and we'll be in till Saturday evening, and Sunday night we're flying out. Sunday morning, sorry, we're flying out to Houston.
All right.
Awesome.
We love you.
It is like a torture waiting to get to Houston. I want to get there.
You
sound like you're having a good time for being tortured.
I know we are too, but okay. Here's Jeff. I found Jeffrey.
That's what happens when you've been apocalypsed.
Yeah, that's it. Here's Jeff.
All right.
Bye.
Hello, young lad and older statesman.
Hey, how is it going over there in Nashville, young man?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Very good. Having a wonderful time and can't wait to get down to Houston, though.
Yeah, we're waiting for you.
It'd be great.
So what is your largest impression of your trip thus far?
Just doing the music and just having little talks to people here and there, and it's quite good, actually, really enjoying ourselves. It's amazing how much you can talk to people without offending them about the gospel. And I think the main thing is, like I've always said, I've said to you guys that when you say to people that that Jesus Christ was successful, they just, what are they going to say? He wasn't. There's no argument. There's just success. So I have no problem sharing the gospel.
You've been in Nashville for a few days. There's a heavy Christian influence in Nashville, of course.
Yeah.
And have you seen certain reactions there as you guys have been sharing your music and your story with folks when you say things like Jesus was successful?
Yeah, I get really good feedback from it, and I've had some really good talks with people who are, hard in the nose Pentecostals, but they can't argue against the gospel.
Yeah.
There's no, and how you put it, I guess, I don't kind of, I got my little ways of talking to people. And, they just agree. It's like saying to someone, would you like $1 million? Well, they're not going to say no. And if you speak to them about it, then they can't say no. And, let's face it, most of so-called Christendom is feeling on such a guilt trip and such a condemnation trip that, anything they can have to release them of that guilt, anything they can hear to release them of that guilt and condemnation, and you hit them in the heart, they really want to hear that.
I agree with you, Jeff. I think that the only thing that really closes people down from the gospel is if you're making money or fame from the religion of Christianity. Then you don't want to hear it, because it's going to cut into the money and it's going to cut into the popularity.
That's a sad part,
And that causes it makes it difficult, because here's the thing. All of the people that we want to reach are under these people who would resist the gospel because of their money and their position.
Mm.
And just like what happened in Georgia, you had wonderful things to share with the people, but what happens, the pastor gets up and refutes it all.
Mm.
Mm. When the people's hearts were open. Now, the pastor, I don't think the pastor's hard-hearted or doesn't like the gospel any less than anybody else would. But she has something at stake. She has,
that's it.
There's money and position at stake.
Mm. Mm.
And you had money and position at stake. And you know that you have to cross that line to where that money and position are not going to stop you in the process. I had the same thing. Money and position, just they cannot be the things that stand in the way. But I think you're correct. We got a world full of especially Christians who are so burdened, they're ready for this gospel, but their hierarchy stands up and speaks against it, just exactly what happened in Georgia.
Yeah, and look, especially here, there's so many people that have been ripped off by the music industry and have hit, Christians that have gone back into drugs and hit all that stuff, and, there's a lot of wounded.
Yeah.
And all they just need to hear is the gospel.
That's good stuff.
They really do, and have a bit of love that has no conditions.
Yeah.
So I better go back into the...
All right, but I've been informed by the very efficient Gospel Revolution administrator, Jeff Robertson, that your birthday was in the last couple of days. When was your birthday?
It was on the 24th.
Well, happy birthday.
Oh, thank
happy
you very
birthday,
much, Glenn.
A couple of days
you are later. You are quite a gentleman, aren't you, apparently?
Well... Some people would argue with that, but nonetheless,
I've heard arguments, but we're
happy
trying
birthday.
To stand on your side.
All right, we'll see you and talk to you in Houston.
Yep, no worries. See you later. Bye-bye.
All right, no worries. That's what they say in Australia. No worries.
No worries.
No worries. Oh, my God.
What a sneak preview at some lyrics. Jeez.
That is phenomenal stuff.
Yeah.
So I get this email from Jeff Robertson, that when Kate said they rocked it up, her song, he goes, this is from Jeff Robertson, he says, I'm freaking. He said, I got to hear this. The lyrics are awesome.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they sure are.
Yeah, for
someone
sure.
Apocalypsed me.
Yeah. Only Kate could come up with something like that.
Yeah. Well,
oh, jeez.
Something
beautiful.
Tells me she was inspired.
Yeah, for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you got anything else?
Well, it's going to be a fun week this coming week at the Williams residence here in Houston with the Benham's visit, and I'm certainly looking forward to it. And that's all I got.
Jeff and Kate, after their time in the studio in Nashville, on their way to Houston to spend time with Michael and Jeff, and then, Lord willing, that the creek don't rise, I will be there.
Absolutely. And we're expecting Glenn and Jake coming through.
My son Jake and I on our way to California.
Yeah. So it's going to be a fun week at the Williams residence this week.
Well, enjoy, as always.
We will, and you'll be part of it soon. So
look forward to it. This is the kind of webcast that we love. Of course, we love them all. But to be able to speak with Greg Ambergy and Chuck Day from Georgia and Kate and Jeff Benham from Australia, sorry if we didn't get to your email tonight. I hope you understand. I want to thank Sean O'Halloran for being the producer and engineer and call screener extraordinaire. Jeff Robertson is the administrator of the Gospel Revolution. Michael Williams is the president and founder of said Gospel Revolution. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!